This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn-Mark Rushen-Kennison and Noelle Lim. It is 6 a.m. Friday, the 14th of August, and what a rainy Friday it is.
Nope, it's a rainy day. I will never let this go. It is indeed a very rainy day today. It's in between when you feel it's a friendly rain.
Or a Friday rain.
Okay, guys. I think we have established that I have forgotten how to English this morning.
Which is
very rare, so that's why we have to take this opportunity to say something.
You see, yeah. You take an inch and you make it into a mile. That's how these things work. And that is a lesson for life at Friday morning at 6 a.m.
Yes, it is. So, as I was saying, it has been quite a rainy Friday this morning. How have you both been? Are you looking forward to the weekend?
Of course. Of course, the weekend and the next weekend, yeah.
So, I know, just yesterday, I think I was saying how it hadn't rained in a while, and then suddenly now the rain has
come. Came back with a vengeance.
Yeah, so I'm sorry to everyone who wasn't looking forward to the rain, but it has been really hot. I am looking forward to the weekend because it means cheat day is around the corner, which is great.
What are you planning for cheat day?
Oh, there'll be some KFC in there. I'll probably have my chili pan mee and then maybe some pizza in there somewhere.
Now I'm hungry, Noelle.
Or kaya toast.
Kaya toast. In SF2. Oh, yes, of course.
Okay. well, but before we can all get to our breakfast, let's have a look at what we're going to be talking about in this next hour. Later on after the 6:30 news, Noelle, what do we have?
Something about South China Sea, and the other piece is on Thailand. Legal action, possibly, over online monarchy criticism.
Dum-dum-dum. Okay, that's going to happen after 6:30 news
sounds
bulletin.
Sounds very serious. Before the 6:30 bulletin, we'll be talking about the slightly lighter side of things. How has COVID-19 changed your relationship with music, really? Whether it's music providers, live music events, the way you listen to music. So we're going to explore that and maybe how it's changed our listening habits.
All right, and remember, if you want to weigh in on our conversations, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at VFM Radio. Up next, talking about Zoom medicine and whether or not it's the new alternative to an in-person appointment. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Danny California by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noelle. 6:07 a.m, Friday the 14th of August, and we're looking this morning at telemedicine. So telemedicine has become the new catalyzed thing as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. It wasn't, of course, invented as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Hospitals were already starting to shift towards it even before that. But in the UK, the Health Secretary Matt Hancock has told the Royal College of Physicians that from now on, all consultations should be teleconsultations unless there's a compelling clinical reason not to. So this is an interesting situation, particularly when you think about the UK, right? And the burden that the NHS suffers, and the fact that in the whole of Europe, I think the number of available hospital beds at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, the NHS was probably the worst equipped to deal with the outbreak of the virus. But I guess, you know, when it comes to the other countries, like Malaysia, for example, whether or not telemedicine will really catch on, not just from a convenience point of view, but from a, you know, person-to-person, you know, engagement point of view. Because when you want to go and see a doctor, I think there's some comfort inherent in the fact that you actually go and see a physical person, isn't there?
I guess so. But it is also an inconvenience, right? Especially if it's not a clinic, if you have to go to a hospital and then there are long lines and appointments, or if you go to the public hospitals, there are generally long lines and there's plenty of hurdles to entry. So maybe for the simple stuff, telemedicine could be a way to kind of meet in the middle. Being able to communicate with a doctor to find out whether something is serious. Because a lot of times we are just worried about whether this is what we're feeling is serious or not. And then maybe then the doctor can then further recommend, okay, maybe you should come in. Instead of everyone going in for basically any little concern they have.
Yeah, so, you know, you can spend half a day in a hospital, right? Especially in a general hospital. And so that's the situation you have where, you know, so you can wait in the comfort of your home. you know, if you do telemedicine. And I think for me, it also depends how serious the illness is, whether the treatment is actually available in Malaysia or in Singapore. So, for example, like oncology treatment, chemotherapy may not always be the best treatment possible, and it's not even maybe available in Singapore, and you might have to do it in Australia and UK. And if you have telemedicine, you can, you know, talk to the doctor until to the point of, you know, where you go for your surgery, and that will really drastically reduce cost from my point of view.
I guess I also wonder what it's going to be like from the perspective of the doctors themselves, right? Because, okay, so my family is the kind of people that makes really good friends with their doctors and gets their numbers and then, you know, WhatsApps them.
And that's what I do too.
All kinds of aches and pains, right, Noelle? So then, you know, then your doctor kind of doesn't have a time off. Right, because when it's the same problem as we face when we're working from home, and the assumption is that you are always available on your phone.
Yeah, so I think there are many doctors who have a cutoff point, and they will say, "I will see you on Monday, or we'll discuss more." And you know, that sort of kind of statement, holding statement, or they make it very clear, weekends are off mark.
Yeah, I think it's going to be generally that's your personal relationship with the doctor, right? So you've already built that, you've met this doctor in person, you've built that rapport, that relationship, and then you are after hours disturbing the doctor. That's a different situation, right?
Yeah, unless it's an emergency.
Yeah, unless it's an emergency. But here, telemedicine is looking to formalize that. So it is using the structure of the existing 9-to-5 work flow that a doctor may go through, and then adding, basically breaking up the appointments into virtual appointments. And it may have been more disruptive before the pandemic, but during the pandemic, I mean, we've seen revenues for some of the telemedicine players like Teladoc, I think almost double, if I'm not mistaken, over the last few months, because people were basically not going to the hospitals because they could not double, but there was a lot of growth there. Sorry, incorrect. But there was a lot of growth there. And because people weren't going to the hospital for normal things. You weren't going to your doctor for normal things. One, either you were afraid that you may get, you may come into exposure with someone who's got COVID-19 because they're going in to check COVID-19 related symptoms, or hospitals just didn't have the capacity to do so. So maybe we've molded that habit a little bit more.
Yeah, so I think telemedicine does open up many other possibilities. Over time, maybe in 10 years' time, we could be taking our temperature with our handphones, right? You know, there would be built-in sensors to do all that.
Actually, there are already attachments available to do that in the US, and they have been available for quite some time. Because I went and visited my aunt who lives there, and she was showing me kind of the kind of attachments that she had. She had a plug-in thermometer that she could plug into her phone, and with an app that was able to read temperatures.
Yeah. So now it's a plug-in, but next time it will be in the phone itself.
Yeah, maybe so, because we've already got a lot of biometrics available on our phones in this day and age, right? So let us know what you think. You know, what do you think is the future of telemedicine? Would you use it? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are heading into some messages, and then up next we're taking a look at the music industry, so stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was John Mayer with New Light, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noelle. 6:18 a.m, so not much light available just yet, but, you know, give it another half an hour or so. And we're looking at the revival of the music industry over in the UK, because the UK has opened its first socially distanced venue. So this seats 2,500 people on 500 spaced out viewing platforms. So this is quite an interesting picture that's accompanying this article in Variety. So it had its first concert on Tuesday night, and it's on a racing track field, and all of the people are in these little slightly raised metal platforms with a little gate in between, and this that you can see the green space in between each of these little raised platforms. So apparently there was quite high levels of compliance as well during the event itself, because organizers obviously told people, you know, try not to mingle between the between the platforms, because you don't want to be, just completely cancelling out the effect of this physical distancing. So it's quite interesting. You wonder whether this is going to be really the future of live music events, and really for how long?
I think everything we're looking at now is some attempt at the future of any form of industry at this point, right? Maybe we meet somewhere in the middle. I'm looking at this layout, and I'm just wondering, how did they exit? Because now you're spaced out on these platforms, maybe 6 feet apart, I think, and maybe two or three to a platform, or maybe your family or whatever. But then again, when you all exit, you have to be really orderly. If not, you've totally just ruined this entire endeavor.
I guess you have to do it like, you do at school assemblies, right? Okay,
the row in the back. Rows.
Yeah, but after a rock concert, you'd be so tired, right? And you, who knows, you may have had some alcohol. The last thing you want to do is an orderly exit.
I think after a rock concert, I'd be really amped up and I'd be like, let's take over the world. And okay, can everyone please exit in orderly lines? Like,
row one first, interesting. Row two.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it really depends on how much you want to see it. But on the flip side, I do hope that something works out, because live events being cancelled is a big deal to the music industry, because most musicians make their money on the road through events, through any form of concert. You know, I mean, we're not talking about the Taylor Swifts of the world. We're talking about the regular bands in our what used to be our the bars or the restaurants that we frequented. The small musician has been severely impacted by this, and some of them I've seen are trying Facebook Live and getting tips online and things like that. But it's still not the same as performing a live event for them.
Yes, I think, yeah, for them, some people do like to perform live, right? And also for the audience to receive that. When I look at the seats, right, I have to say, well, this looks like a VIP sitting. You know, you have your own space, you can bring your own food, have a picnic there and actually have some space to move, unlike a normal rock concert where everyone's elbow to elbow.
Yeah, but that's the point. When you're in a concert, you're in the pit there, you want to be with everyone and feel the vibe and the energy.
And elbow to elbow.
Elbow to elbow, because then you can jump together in sync. In sync? In synchronization? Whatever the word is I'm looking for.
I'm giving you a bit of a look, because this doesn't sound like my idea of fun, but I've also never been to a rock concert.
The vibe, yeah. And
I'm
the
talking
atmosphere.
About when, yeah. I, when we're talking about rock concerts, I'm talking about Metallica. Okay, I'm talking about the stuff where you want to stand up and let's rock out.
Yes, of course.
I wonder how old I sound saying the word rock out.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is the future, right? And while this article did interview a couple of people who said, yeah, you know, I missed the mosh pit, The longer you put up with this and you exit in an orderly fashion after this rock concert, perhaps the sooner those mosh pits can come back, right, is the idea. Because if we break the rules and we see clusters come up, then this period of unusual behavior is just going to drag on even longer. And overall, you know, the music industry has changed quite a lot as a result of COVID-19. And I think one of the other areas that has seen a very different stream of behavior has been the streaming business, because with everybody sitting at home and a lot of people working from home and needing that background noise, I know I for one have had music streaming in the background almost all day, every day when I'm working from home. So these players will likely have seen quite the boost from COVID-19. The question is whether or not they'll be able to convert those users and whether that behavior will continue.
I think when we talk about the streaming industry, that is really the biggest part of the change that we've seen in the business, right? Because it disrupted the way that music is distributed legally at the very least. But during this time, there is a very clear difference between a live event and what you listen to on your own. Because if you're not a fan of live events, you would never have gone for one. Maybe you would have gone for one concert and be like, oh, this is not my thing. I prefer listening to it at home. These are two completely different experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
of
you
course.
Have to enjoy the actual going to the event, the traffic jam that's normally in a part of the process.
The whole ceremony.
Go
right?
3 hours early so that you can get parking 5 miles away.
And then post that on social media, do all your selfies.
You won't be able to, because the networks will be so jammed. You can't get any communication out.
Spoken like
I've only gone on average maybe one a year. I have friends who go like maybe this time, if not for COVID-19, they would have gone for me 10 or 12 this year.
Hey, I've been to one in Singapore and it was very sane and civilized. pre-COVID days.
The last time I've done anything like this, you know, parking far, far away and walking 3 hours was probably for a Merdeka parade. So that goes to show my F1 music race. Taste, you know.
So. You actually went for a Merdeka parade.
I did go for a Merdeka parade when I was young. Yeah.
Okay, it's quite an experience.
Good. Yeah,
very
actually, patriotic. It is Merdeka month. I used to wake up for the parades. That we've gone on a little bit of a tangent here, but
yeah,
essentially,
but it's still a live event.
Yeah,
right?
it's these kind of things.
The only time SOPs. I went for a parade, the national parade, the Merdeka parade, was actually to cover the birthday event. If you recall, there was one that was just before the Merdeka parade.
Yes, that was 2 years ago. Interesting.
Yeah, but you know, so just think about that. All that's changed, right? So how are we going to come back from that? How does it change? Are we going to have metal seats far apart? Actually, just before, Dave Chappelle did a live event, but it was a very small one, and it was spaced out 2 seats and then maybe like 6 feet apart, and then it was later streamed on Netflix. So I think that was one of the first live events I saw, but I saw it on streaming, but that I saw being conducted in the COVID world, really.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be pent-up demand for these concerts.
Yeah, so this is going to be a very interesting thing to observe as we continue with our physical distancing measures, but do let us know what you think. How has COVID-19 changed your relationship with the music industry? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have the 6:30 news bulletin coming up, but first ZZ Top with Gimme All Your Lovin', BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Live and Let Die by Guns N' Roses, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noelle Lim. 6:39 a.m, Friday the 14th of August, and we're looking at some international stories that happened overnight and yesterday. And on Bloomberg here, there's an interesting article actually involving us, but in an international dispute. So Malaysia has, in a quite rare public rebuke, rejected China's maritime claims in the South China Sea. So the Malaysian government made a submission to the UN 2 weeks ago, it appears, on its rights over the remaining portion of a continental shelf just beyond 200 nautical miles from the country's baselines. And this was a statement made by our foreign minister, Minister Datuk Sri Hishamuddin Hussein, in Parliament, and this was in response to a similar claim that China made back in December. So Malaysia is opposing China's claim that they have historic rights to the waters.
Yeah, I think it's important to just contextualize why this is important, right? Because the South China Sea in general everyone claims certain parts of the waters, and in those waters, basically, you've got, well, sovereign rights and also resource rights to those resources. Mm-hmm. And we're talking rights from fish, which is fisheries, and to oil. These are all resources. Everyone's trying to fight for them. And that's why the South China Sea is so complicated, because you've got many countries really fighting for it. And for a long time, there's always been this narrative that ASEAN should collectively come together and fight against this. You know, it's kind of like a trade union, but for the countries in the South China Sea. But China has refused to do anything in a group. It's all individual dealings, which is unfair in a lot of perspectives.
Yeah, and to just give an update, the government, our government, Malaysian government, made a submission to the United Nations about 2 weeks ago on its rights over that remaining portion, as you mentioned. And Foreign Minister Hishamuddin Hussein told Parliament on Thursday it was really in response to a similar claim that China had made to the UN last year in December. And I think really Malaysia's submission to the UN also comes on the heels of Australia and US rejecting China's maritime claims in response to what the two allies see as really an intensifying campaign to dominate this area, which, as we say, resource rich. And in any case, it's we've always assumed that that's ours, right? And likewise, China too.
Yeah, so this is a complicated situation in the South China Sea, right? Because it's not just the waters, it's also the features within the region. And when I talk about features, I'm talking about the little tiny outcroppings of rock that some would say are islands, but some others would say are rocks. And whether or not they're able to sustain human habitation is all up in the air. And why that's important is because China has, in several of these island chains that are closer to us than it southeast China, by the way, they've built air bases and they've reclaimed large swaths of land that you're able to land a plane on, that in some cases independent maritime trackers have said that they've actually placed missile silos on. So it has become, it is a security issue, not just a resource issue. And why this is different, why this new, this a move by the current foreign ministry is different, is because previous iterations of the foreign ministry in the past have always taken the tack of, oh, we'll negotiate through China, with China through the avenue of ASEAN. Oh, you know, we'll be able, I'm sure we'll be able to come to some kind of multilateral agreement. That's never been the case. So, you know, it's like after a certain point, you're like, isn't the definition of insanity repeating the same thing over and over again?
Yeah, I think so. Malaysia obviously has to either join forces, right, of some sort, have some alliance with Australia to, you know, to stop China's claim over DC. And I think historically, this is the 9-dash line, right? Or is it was called the 10-dash line now and 11-dash line?
There have been several versions of it. So some early ones were a 7-dash line, an 8-dash line, an 11-dash line. But the one that got submitted to the UN in, I think it was 2007 or 2009, that really made waves on the in the international community was a 9-dash line. But China has claimed, this line has existed in the Chinese consciousness for many years.
Is this all the way to Cheng Ho, Laksamana Cheng Ho?
Well, they say it is. That's the basis of their right to ancient discovery, which they use to defend the 9-dash line. But if we think about it, Admiral Cheng Ho's journeys were in the 1400s. There were other maritime nations in this period.
Yeah, and as
time.
I know, maps weren't that accurate, maps that were drawn during that period.
Yeah, and I think this is definitely something, one of the bigger geopolitical issues that Malaysia has to manage, is particularly in the region. And I think Dr. Sri Shafi Abdal addressed this during the Breakfast Grill on last week, actually, exactly a week ago. He spoke to Khoo Soo Chuang. And so if you want to check out that conversation, it's available on the BFM app, on the Apple App Store, Google Play, or on Spotify.
Yes, sir. So this is definitely going to be a long-standing issue. It'll be interesting to see whether or not Malaysia's policy stance on the South China Sea starts to shift under the Perikatan National Government. But right now we have some messages for you. And then up next, we're going to be taking a look at the front pages of our newspapers. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Mr. Blue Sky by Electric Light Orchestra, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. Now, we've been talking about a number of interesting things this morning, and Ro has WhatsApped in about the live event discussion that we were having. He says, may not be from COVID, but the lead singer will end up in hospital when he dives into the mosh pit, only to find that social distancing isn't going to break his fall.
Probably not the best thing to do.
Yeah, I know. And it's because it's probably going to be hard to break, right? This habit of just not touching people and not getting close to people. But then, if you've already taken the step to get into a mosh pit, presumably you're okay at that point with physical contact.
Yeah, but I guess habits can change if your livelihoods are dependent on them, right? Mm-hmm. Like things will have to change in order for the industry to get back on its feet.
All right, and now we have some of the front pages of the papers for you. And of course, the Star I have in front of me. And this is a story that I think has been going has been gaining quite some traction on social media. 5 months jail for super spreader. So this is the origin, the index patient for the Sivaganga cluster that was detected, that I think now has 45 active cases. About 6,000 people have been screened for it. This is a restaurant owner, a Nasi Kandar restaurant owner, who defied the home isolation order, the home surveillance order that he was issued after he came back from Sivaganga. As a result, I think the cases have been detected in three states by this point: Kedah, Perlis, and Penang. So he's been sentenced to 5 months jail and been fined RM3,000.
Wow, a super spreader indeed. In the news, New Straits Times, up to RM500,000 fine for mask profiteers. So if you're going to be selling the mask above RM1, you will be faced with this fine or a compound of up to RM250,000. And individuals who commit the offence face a fine of up to RM100,000, 3 years jail, or up to RM50,000 compound. Yeah, so And yeah, so even experts are saying, you know, sometimes a fine is not enough. Maybe jail time is needed, according to the New Straits Times.
So I've got a different angle on that, on the Malaysian Reserve. They're taking the view from the pharmacy's perspective, and they spoke to Malaysian Pharmaceutical Society President Amare Buang, who talked about how the sudden change is going to impact the pharmacies because they would have bought their stock at a higher price from before. So they're going to see, I think one, the numbers quoted here is that pharmacies could be forced to bear a loss of 25,000 ringgit for every 1,000 boxes in their stockpiles due to the sudden reduction. That's what the Pharmaceutical Society president said. So right now, I think it's capped at 1 ringgit a face mask, or is it 50 ringgit per box for retail and 95 cents per unit for wholesale, or 47.50 for that for the box in the wholesale sector. So I think it's just the sudden change that's really impacting them. And that's the concern there. Because now I think they're trying to balance the fact that it's mandatory to wear the masks now. And you don't want it to be too expensive for everyone to wear, right? Because so on the flip side of this, you have some talk in Parliament yesterday about how the government may want to look at lowering the face mask. And this was from the Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs Minister, Dato Alexander Nantatlingi, who said that if he had his way, he would like to lower it to 70 cents if possible. But the ministry is looking at 80 cents at this point, but no decision on the matter. I think this was something that was talked about in Parliament.
And speaking of Parliament, there's another story in the Star this morning saying it's for Parliament to decide. So this was a decision made by the 9-man bench of the Federal Court when it comes to the death penalty, because they have said in an 8-1 majority decision handed down yesterday that capital punishment for murder and drug trafficking is legally legislated by Parliament, and prescribing that measure of punishment is the prerogative of Parliament. So any suggestions for alternatives will need to be tabled in the Dewan Rakyat.
And this other piece of news in the New Straits Times, the Prime Minister, I think he was responding to some questions in Parliament, and he said that he will chair the Bumiputra Prosperity Council, or Majlis Kemakmuran Bumiputra, as he wants to steer and speed up the empowerment of the Bumiputra economy as part of the national agenda. And I think he points out to some statistics. Bumi poverty incidence was 7.2% last year, compared to only 1.4% for the Chinese, and Indians at 4.8%. And he also says the Bumi ownership of equity in the corporate sector was 16.2% in 2015, compared with non-Bumis. I think they account for 30%. Principally, he doesn't include PNB's holdings yet. And so I think, you know, based on these numbers, he wants to really put this as his national priority.
All right, and that is all of the news that we have for you from the newspapers this morning. But we're bringing you more business news and analysis during the 7 o'clock hour, which is coming up in just a few minutes. So we've got the 7 o'clock news bulletin first. But before that, Black Magic Woman by Santana, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.